Good morning, Wake Up HCC. Cris Oviedo here with you. And it's a Monday morning here at HCC. We are winding down for the holiday season. We are actually on our last week before we break. And I know that I am ready for that break. I need a break. It's been a year of ups, up, downs, very demanding in many ways. And I think that it's, you know, as we come to a close of this year, and I've been reflecting back on it, I think that we all share that sentiment in many ways where, you know, and as we were thinking, oh my gosh, we're getting away from COVID, vaccines are here, we have more freedom. December comes around and we hear all about the spike that's happening, right? And it brings concerns again, it brings worry again and uncertainty. And I know that everybody's questioning, are we gonna have to go back home? Things are starting to get canceled. There's just a lot going on. And our conversation today is around mental health, is around being well. Today we're actually going to focus on veterans' mental health. Because it is important. It's a conversation that I personally feel that doesn't happen very often. We talk about, and I love the fact that we as a community, we as a country are really talking and opening up more about mental health and recognizing it. But I feel that there's communities like a veterans community that is being left behind or maybe not fully understood because just like health, we can't not just generalize and say, well, this is how it works. This is how it is. This is the prescription for everybody. And there you go, right? We need to really center it. We need to really personalize it. And, you know, like I said, today we're going to concentrate on veterans' mental health. Not to say that, again, we're prescribing this as the right way to approach mental health for all of our veterans, because just like with everybody else, this is a very personal journey. And to have that really important conversation, to really bring awareness to some of the complexities, some of the unique parts, some of the unique things that affect our veterans, I have great people joining me this morning. I have Dania Nixon. She is a licensed graduate professional counselor with Counseling and Career Services here at Howard Community College. Mm-hmm. And I also have Michael Griggs, and he is a military services and reporting specialist with the Office of Records Registration and Veterans Affairs at Howard Community College. We have a third guest who will be joining us in a little bit here at our conversation, but we wanted to get started. We wanted to, you know, bring the topic to you guys this morning. And we're going to start with you, Dania. You know, just getting to know you a little bit. If you can just tell us a little bit about your background and what it is that you enjoy the most about your job here at Howard Community College. Thank you both for being with me, for bringing this important topic, to everybody in our community and for sharing your time and this platform with me this morning.
Awesome. Thank you, Cris. My name is Dania Nixon. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm a personal counselor here, counseling and career services. And prior to becoming a therapist, I was active duty military and now I'm in the National Guard. So I would like to throw out a disclaimer that I'm not here as a representative for DOD or the military or the government in any way. I'm just here speaking from my personal experiences as a veteran and my personal and professional experiences as a therapist. One of my favorite things about working at HCC is just getting to be a source of support for students. Going into college, being in college can be just a really interesting time in life. A lot is changing, a lot of new things that can be overwhelming. So I really love getting to be a source of support and really connect with students at this particular time in their lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, college itself is challenging, right? I've been saying this. I can't imagine. I personally thrive in that environment of the classroom where I can go and see my classmates and see my teachers and have that interaction one-on-one. I commend all of our students. And, this morning, not that you guys needed to know this, but this morning we were going to do this show in through Vimeo. And because we are celebrating, you know, our nurses, there's a nursing pinning celebration happening in just a little bit here at Howard Community College. Because of COVID, we had to adjust at the last minute, go from in-person to virtual. But, you know, I commend all of those students because they have been flexible. They have adjusted through all of the ups and downs and have continued to move forward with their education. And again, celebrating everybody that's, you know, finishing that first part of their career today, continuing to move forward. Mike, let's go to you and you know, remind us again, please, of your job here at HCC. You've been with us a couple of times and I so appreciate it. Actually, you were the one who brought this idea. Last time we had this conversation, you were the one who said, I think it's important that we talk about this, and here we are. So just remind us of your job, a little bit about yourself and what you do here at HCC with our students.
Okay, good morning, Chris, and thank you for having me here today. And hello, Dania. I am Michael Griggs, military services and reporting specialist, as you mentioned earlier. What that means is I'm a liaison between the veteran and the VA. I help with their benefits. And some of the companies that help them with their benefits, I'll, you know, just help them out with that. And we'll end up doing a little more, but that's my my primary job is to be a liaison between the student and the VA.
Let's talk about that little more. I think that little more is what sets you apart. So let's just give a little glimpse of what that is.
Okay, well, I was a student. I retired in 2010 from the Navy after 21 plus years of service. And so when I got out of the Navy, I had to navigate the whole thing of doing, you know, benefits and things of that nature. What do I do? How do I do this? How do I do that? So I was looking for somebody like myself at the college that I went to, because I didn't know, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to report this? Am I supposed to report that? How do I get all my benefits? Just little things like that. So, you know, I help them out with that. And there are things that that veterans do outside of the military, like VA claims, things of that nature. And so I had to, you know, go and try to navigate that, you know, appointments, things like that. And I've had veterans come in and say, hey, well, I've had this nagging this and that, and you know, when I got out of the military, I didn't get a ton of help because, you know, you're out processing, and you know, sometimes it's like, okay, here's your paperwork, thank you for your service, and move on. But then there's that, okay, what do I do now? And so I'll help them with that a little bit, you know, based on what I've been through and who I've spoken to with the VA and other organizations to help out with VA claims. So, you know, it's not a part of the job title, but just being a veteran and talking with another veteran, that's the type of thing I'll help out with. Conversations too, just a normal conversation, because I mean, we are we're a different group. You know, people, you know, you sit down and you start talking about where you've been and what you've done, and people relate to it, or they go, okay, well, that's interesting. This is what I did. And it just becomes somewhat of a conversation. I've had one student tell me that it's like a therapy session, and I, you know, I wasn't going for that, but, you know, it ended up being a half hour conversation just about the military, what we've done, and, you know, just everything else in life. So that's the type of thing that I end up doing here. And that's why I like this job so much.
I appreciate everything you just said about that so much, Michael, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because it's not just the nitty-gritty, it's not just the checkbox, this is what needs to happen, done. You know, I love that you said that shared experience, right? That you're not claiming to be a professional, you're not claiming to be, you know, a therapist, you're not claiming to do anything
right
like that. You're doing your job, but you have that experience, you have that shared experience, you have that understanding, because you had to go through that. And Dania, I wanna start that conversation this morning exactly about that. You said, Michael, something about, you know, when I first started, I was looking for somebody like me. I was looking for somebody who at least could understand where I was coming from and help me figure out all of this, right? That transition from, you know, time in service back into civilian life. Dania, let's talk about that. Let's start a conversation there. Mm-hmm. And I know, Mike, you started kind of like focusing on school, But let's broaden it, right? Let's just talk about that transition in itself and some of the uniqueness of that and some of the complexities that maybe we don't forget, maybe we don't understand, maybe we forget, you know, what that really is and feels like. Help us really understand what that transition means and feels and looks like, you know, for our veterans.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great place to start. So I'll kind of start with my own personal experience and maybe use that to illustrate some of these things. So I grew up as a military dependent. I did ROTC in college, commissioned. So my whole life has largely been shaped by the military. So when I left, it wasn't just like leaving a job, but like leaving a way of life kind of. And so I had a lot of feelings about that. I was like nervous, I was really excited, kind of sad, right? So there's just like a mixture of things. And then, you know, my example happens to be about school, but that's just what I did next. So I went into grad school after like kind of 3 weeks of being out of the military. And most of the people in my cohort were fresh out of undergrad. So we just had like really different experiences. And I felt really disconnected from them a lot of times because, you know, they're like very stressed about this week of like a couple of assignments. And I just couldn't relate to that because I'm like, this is like a Tuesday, right? Like I've had way more stressful weeks than this. And so I think that that example kind of highlights that feeling of a disconnection from what I knew, what I've been experiencing for me kind of my whole life to this like new realm where I just felt so like out of place, you know? And so like my classmates are bonding around their shared anxiety and I'm like, what? And so something I hear a lot from veterans is like, I feel like I'm in this weird space where I'm not having the same experience as the people around me. And they're also not really understanding my experience, right? And so there's just this like disconnect and that can feel kind of isolating.
You know, and you're talking about school, rejoining family life, I could imagine that is also, you know, kind of like the same because when you're serving and this is, you know, listening to other veterans talk about their experiences. I remember very clearly somebody saying in a conversation that they were having, I had to be alert. Like I literally would sleep with one eye open, one eye closed because we were in danger. This was somebody who was, you know, at the front line. He was like, our lives depended on us being alert. And we had that sense of urgency of something could happen at any minute. And suddenly being taken out of that and having this peace at home. And, you know, as you just said, the things that are super big for us, right? Like, you know, maybe our child did something that was out of place or whatever. They were like, those things felt so small compared to my experience that it was really hard, even though they were craving to be home and they were really looking forward to become part of that family again. Redefining their purpose in the family, their role in the family was a real struggle for this person who was sharing, you know, their testimony. I found that so interesting and so valuable. And we just had our third guest join us here this morning. Good morning and welcome, Paul. Mike, or Dania, you know, if you guys can talk a little bit about that, because I think that we watch the videos and oh my gosh, I don't want to dismiss this, right? And I definitely am not trying to make this into a bad thing. I just want to bring awareness of this dynamic, right? And of the challenge that it is, because there's nothing that makes me cry more and makes me, you know, a little more, I don't know, just warm and fuzzy inside and seeing those videos of, you know, people in uniform coming and surprising their loved ones and you feel the love and you feel the excitement, but that's all we see, right? And so we are thinking, oh my gosh, all the joy, all the greatness about this reunion and happy moment. We are not really seeing that story behind it. We're not seeing the challenges of rejoining the family dynamics, of becoming part again, of those challenges of figuring out, okay, who am I in this family? When I left, my baby was just a baby. Now my baby, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, it's a new person. I'm also a new person for this family. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think it's really important to elevate that. Yes, it is a joyful time, but it's not, that's not all that it is. That is not all that it is. And we need to support our veterans and their families, because as much as that love and that joy is there, they need special attention. They need special support so that they can really come together as a family again. So Danya, help us a little bit with that.
Yeah. So I think you hit the nail on the head talking about this like change in roles or like settling into a new role. So especially for folks with kids, right? There's a routine that's been happening while you've been gone, and now you're back and you like, okay, this is how I remember things, right? Or this is how I used to engage with my child. That's not working. They don't really know me, right? That can feel really like hurtful, right? A lot of times people are very hurt by this. And so I think that there needs to be a conversation about that, that like things are different. Different is not bad. Different is just different. And we can adjust to different, you know, we can re-engage with our children or our spouses or other family members. We can develop new ways of connecting. You know, maybe before all I did was like change my baby's diaper and tickle their feet and that was enough. And now like I got to do more than that. So yeah, but I think a conversation about the fact that this doesn't have to be a bad time. It's just a different time, and that it may be difficult adjusting, but lots of things are difficult, but they can still be accomplished.
Thank you for bringing that up, that it's, you know, it can't be challenging, but it can be really good where you can still concentrate on that joy and just find the way to really find together and make it work. So Paul, good morning. I want to go to you. I am going to ask you to tilt your camera down just a little bit so that we can really see you in the center of the frame. Thank you. And, you know, if you could just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you, your background, your story, and how you're serving, you're continuing to serve your community, you know, far away from military life. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Again, I apologize for being a little late. I have some technical issues here. I'm a former Marine. In 1983, I was blown up in Lebanon and buried alive for 2 hours in the building. Spent two months in a hospital. Got out of the hospital. And you're right, when you come home, nobody understands what you've been through. You know, I went in one way, came out a different way. I was a wreck. A Vietnam veteran pulled me to the side probably 6 months after I got out of the hospital and introduced me to a veteran support group. During that time, that veteran support group helped stabilize me and get me back to thinking, because when you come home, you leave one way and you come back a different way, but your family only remembers the way you left. They don't understand the person that comes back. They don't understand anything about the person that comes back. And you come back and you can't explain it to them because you don't know how to explain it to them. So you have a lot of conflicts. You find that there's conflict and everything. So to make my story different is that I was born and raised in New York City. So when I was in New York City, I couldn't handle being back at home with my family when I got out. So I went someplace where nobody really knew me and started all over. And when I started all over, I started over with a new set of principles and a new set of people. And then I met the Vietnam veteran and he kind of helped change my life. And I was able to lock everything away. He didn't really help me. What he taught me how to do was lock things away, really, because that's what Vietnam veterans were doing at the time, was locking everything in a safe and leaving it locked. All right. That worked for 10 years for me. Almost 11, almost 12, actually. Started coming unraveled in 93, 94, 95. We had Oklahoma City. I had a completely meltdown because it was just like being in a building buried alive again. That's when I realized I had to start taking different ways to doing it. By this time, I had a family, had kids who knew nothing about my past because I didn't talk about it. So they didn't know anything about it. So I had to go talk to somebody and help and try to get my life rearranged. And during that time, I realized talking to people, there were a lot of people, a lot of veterans in my position that were going through the same thing. So I expanded out. And in just talking, I became a supporter of veterans to help them get to different steps where they could, you know, rearrange their lives and understand what was going on. Then, you know, as the years went on, I went to veterans hospitals. I took other veterans with me who had been through traumatized situations And we went into a hospital where there were more traumatized veterans, and they were able to unwind by helping those veterans. So what we did is veterans helping veterans. And then, you know, since I've been on Howard County, I started a veteran support group here because veterans can help veterans because they understand each other. One minute you're a team with 5 people or 10 people or even 40 people, and you're all together, you're a family, you're in a war zone, you're hot, everybody's brother, 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 and then you're out and you're by yourself. Then you come home and you're not used to civilian life where whatever people say is not always what they mean, and you don't understand that. So you're used to saying what you mean, meaning what you say. Then you get into civilian life and they don't do that. They say you one thing, they do something different. They may hint at one thing, think you're interpreting it correctly, and you're interpreting it completely wrong. And before you know it, you're the outsider and everybody's calling you crazy. And now you act crazy because everybody's calling you crazy, and you fulfill that fantasy of these other people and you don't even realize you're doing it. So what I try to tell the guys that we talk to in these veteran support groups is if you want to talk about something, we don't judge, come to the support group and talk about anything you want to talk about, because we're not going to judge you. We're going to sit there and give you an opportunity to be yourself. And we're going to give you, if you need the help, we're there to give you the help, but we're not going to judge you. And then we're going to let everybody in the group tell you what helped them, so maybe it will help you. We're not telling you what to do. We're just telling you what works for us. And maybe you might want to try it and see if it works for you. So what we do, and what I do, is I facilitate those meetings. And I try to get these guys to understand that I was there. You know, I may have not had the same wounds you have. I may have not had the same issues you have, but I was there in the mud. And then we try to get, and lately, you know, we've had a lot of females who come in with sexual trauma in the military that they've dealt with. And we accept them the same way as that we accept the people who had, you know, who've been shot and blown a leg off, because that trauma is real. And it's real to them. It's real to the situation that they're dealing with. And they were military, and the other people, their families won't understand that. So if they don't understand that, it's hard for them to associate what's going on with that individual. So we have that. Then we have the veterans who come in who've never been in a war zone, but fired drones from 1,000 miles away and blown and watched the drones hit and spatter lives. That's traumatizing enough too. So we deal with that because that's another trauma that people don't realize. Oh, you've never been in a war zone. You never see nothing. But if you watch video and you know you struck that video and blew that family up by mistake, instead of the terrorist that you were looking for or the zone you were looking for, you hit a car and you killed 20 kids, that's traumatizing. Even what happens in war, but that's traumatizing to those guys and gals. So when you deal with those situations, those are all parts of being a military person and trauma. You come home at the end of the day, and it's almost like you walk into another world, and everybody expects you to be the happy father, the happy brother, the happy son that left. And meanwhile, you got this look on your face like you don't want to be bothered with nobody, just leave you alone. And then what do? The guys end up turning into drugs, or they turn to alcohol, they turn to abusiveness, they turn to violence, they turn to all these things because they don't know where to go. And they're too proud to say that they have a problem. So these are the issues that, you know, as a veteran, and what veterans face every single day when they come home. And it doesn't matter if they're 18 or 80, they have faced these issues. And being able to face them and let them know that they're not alone is the first step to recovery.
Thank you for normalizing, first being so open and honest and just transparent about the reality. I think that it's not easy. I can tell you that sitting here is not easy to listen to this, but it's really important that we all just listen. And like you said, without any judgment. The other thing I want to thank you for is for normalizing and for really leveling the plane for everybody, because we forget that everybody who has served is a hero, right? And that's not to say that because you were buried for 2 hours alive under a building, you're more hero than somebody who, like you said, was doing some of the other work, you know, that was never in that front line, that was never buried under a building. So thank you for bringing that up. And thank you for recognizing and helping us recognize that everybody who has served can come back and have trauma, because I think that as a society, we are ready to clap those who have had those heroic Hollywood-like moments, But we forget that the reality is that everybody who's there is making the same sacrifice, whatever job it is that you are doing out there, you know, serving in the military, in the Navy, in the Air Force, you're making a sacrifice. You are a hero just for what you're doing already. So thanks for just leveling, you know, that for everybody and for just bringing us all to that reality. I really appreciate that so much. You mentioned trauma and you talked about trauma and then, yeah, I want you to help us here with that, because I think that that's the other thing that we forget, right? Just like we are expecting our heroes to have this really big moment, right? Almost Hollywood, like I said, like story behind it. We expect the same thing about trauma. It has to be something that's really huge, really big. It has to be newsworthy almost, right? Let's redefine trauma for all of our viewers and all of our listeners. And let's really bring it home. What is trauma? How do we need that big moment? Or can it happen from smaller things? Like you were saying, you know, just pushing a button, something smaller. Can that create trauma in our lives?
Absolutely. So trauma, generally speaking, right, is this perceived or actual like threat to a person's like body or life or like their sense of safety. And so, you know, if you're in like combat, that can be very traumatic. Military sexual trauma also can be very traumatic, even if there's no violence involved. You know, maybe there's coercion, but not like physical violence. Those things can absolutely be traumatic, and trauma is complex. It's a complex system of responses from your body and from your mind to those situations. And that can look differently for a lot of people. So, you know, a common one that people associate with veterans is fireworks. And a lot of veterans are triggered by fireworks because of their combat experiences. But there are also veterans who, you know, as Paul was saying, maybe they have like had to drop this bomb from, you know, the States, right, with a drone. And then their spouse is like, oh, can you pick up milk on the way home, right? Like, that's weird. It's those things are supposed to be very separate. So that can be traumatizing. Now you're bringing that home to your family immediately, right? You did that thing this afternoon and now you're home this evening. So yeah, trauma is very complex, and sometimes it doesn't look the way people expect it to look, right? So maybe folks are looking for someone who's like severely depressed. And that may be the case, but externally, that's not what you see. You might see someone who's like more reckless, right? Engaging in like dangerous behavior, as was mentioned. So I think part of it is like you said, there's this very Hollywood-like perception of what all of these things mean and look like, but that's not always the case.
And I'd like to add, trauma can be compounded. You can have little trauma, and it builds up almost like an electric shock until you explode. Trauma can be little things. Maybe you were in a combat zone, but you didn't get hit. Maybe your friend got hit. Maybe this other guy got hit. Maybe this other person got hit. It's always missing you. And then something happens to somebody close you have, and you explode. It could be home. You could have brought all that home with you and said everything is locked away and you're good, you're great. And then something happens at work and this boss starts to get you stressed out. The coworkers start to get you stressed out. Your family's getting you stressed out. That all adds up until you explode. So it's one of those things where trauma can be seen right away sometimes, and sometimes it can just be calculated, where it's, you know, multiplied until that moment comes when you can't hold it anymore and you explode. And that's one of the things that I think as people who don't understand it, don't realize it. And the only way you can realize it is see the warning signs. And if you don't know the warning signs, you don't see them until it's too late. And I find that problematic because, you know, I see these guys come home and you talk to them and, you see it in their face, you know. Well, I see it in their face. Let me put it like this: I'm able to see it in their face because they do a good job of hiding. Everything is wonderful, and you've known they've been through stuff. Everything is not wonderful. And if people can learn how to get people to talk about it and not gaff them off, I think it would defuse a lot of things. But some people can't handle reality. You know, they can't handle what these people have been through. They can't handle what they want to say. So they ignore it or they talk around it and they pretend not to hear it. Well, that doesn't work for a veteran who needs to let loose that excess of energy, because that what it does, it just pushes it back inside and overloads his circuits. Anyway, that's fine.
A recent study showed that, you know, there's been an increase by 90% of veterans utilizing mental health services. Two things that come at least to me, right, from those numbers is one, or make me question rather, is one, is it that there is more awareness amongst their veterans of the need, right, to utilize and to seek mental health? Is that why that's happening? Or is it just that there's that much of an increase of the need of mental health services, right? Like it's a question I have in my mind. Is it really that our veterans are getting stronger in seeking that mental health, or is it just that we have so much more need for it? And the other thing that I want to break from that is, you know, I want you guys to talk about, like you just said, Paul, some of the things that we should look at. And Dania, you also said, you know, depression, like what are the most common diagnoses? What are the most common mental health issues that our veterans are facing today? And I'll let, you know, either one of you guys take this one.
Mm-hmm. So answer your question about the increase in folks like seeking services, without like looking at the study or anything, I like to think that it's both. So it's hopefully people are becoming more comfortable with seeking services and are doing that. And also there is the potential that the need is continuing to increase because of the state of the world, you know, not even just as a military member or a veteran, like you're a veteran within the larger world where there's like a pandemic happening and there's all these other like compounding factors. So I would imagine both of those could account for that increase. And as far as like things that we see most commonly with veterans, you know, you're talking about like depression, anxiety, PTSD, also like traumatic brain injuries. And so those things are, at least for depression, anxiety, those are pretty common in the general population as well. But we are seeing them occur at slightly higher rates among veterans, given all of the things that we just talked about.
And I would add to, I would add to that is that, you know, like she said, that it's not, before, if you seeked help, those of you were weak, you were crazy, nobody wants to be around you, this guy has problems, he's shell-shocked, he's battle fatigued, he's PTSD, don't go near him, he's crazy. That's kind of set aside now. People are more acceptable to saying, listen, I need some help. I was a Marine, you know, when you got out of the Marine Corps, you thought you could run through a brick wall and not get hurt, okay? So when you came out, if you told somebody you were having problems, they looked at you as being weak and insufficient. So now it's more acceptable to be able to sit there and go, I need some help. It's more acceptable. It's still not everybody's doing it, but it's more acceptable for the guys to say that they need some help because this is the problems that we're having. So piggybacking on what she was saying is that if you look at it like that, I can see where more people are actually getting the help that they need. At least they're trying. Some of them don't follow through all the way, but they take that first step. Getting to take the second step is a little more difficult from time to time, but at least they get that first step in there. And it's because somebody's talked them into it.
So let's talk about that, right? And that importance of that first step. You talked earlier also about non-judgment. It's also a two-part question here, right? Is what are some of those maybe red flags? What are some of those things that we should be looking at, right? On our veterans that we could maybe notice and say, and that's really the second part of this question is, how do we approach that? If we recognize some of these red flags, right, that you can tell us about, how do we approach them? What's the best way? How do we support? How do we start that conversation so that it does not feel judgmental, but it actually feels, you know, coming from a place of love and care and support and really caring about, you know, the wellness of our veterans? And Paul, let's start with you, and then we go to Dania.
Okay, so what I like to say is this: to get somebody to open up, first you got, if you're surprised at what they tell you, you can't show your surprise, because if you show you're too surprised, they will shut down in a minute and figure, you know, I can't tell them this, they can't even handle this part. Mm-hmm. Two, if you can get them to talk, let them talk without interrupting them. giving them opportunity to express it. If you have to write down a note or something so you can remember how to come back at it, giving them an opportunity to release it. Because once they release it, you will see emotions drain. You will watch their face drain and the emotions come out, and you have started the first step of defusing a bomb. All right, that's one. Two, when you see the red flags will be, a lot of times if they've been in a hostile situation where you know they've been in and they don't want to talk about it at all, that's because they're holding it inside and they're not letting it out. What they're doing is they're holding it inside and they don't think you can handle it, or they don't think you could be responsible for it. So you can make some recommendations, and they got to be slight recommendations, because if you feel like you're pushing them, all you do is push them away. You can make recommendations like, hey, you know, there's a veterans group down there. Maybe you don't feel comfortable talking to me. You know, talk with some veterans, you know, some guys that's been in the mud, you know, have done some things. Maybe they talk to you and you can talk with them. Give them that kind of out. You know, give them, you know, the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars or something like that, where they can feel comfortable talking to individuals who will understand them a little bit better. And they may feel better talking to them, because they may know these guys have been through some stuff and it's not going to judge them. So sometimes it's hard to talk to your family, because you're supposed to be the mighty, especially if you're a man who has an ego problem, you're supposed to be the mighty guy, never fall down, always marching straight, always picking everybody up and carrying them on their back. And meanwhile, you're doing that and your energy level is going down and down and down. And then 1 minute, you know, you're at the bottom and you explode. You don't even know how. So those are the things I look at when, you know, I talk to veterans, and what, like I said, what helped me out and what's helped other veterans out over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you made some really, really great points, Paul, especially about when people come to you with something, and truthfully, this applies to even folks you know that aren't veterans. If someone is trusting you with information, like, just let them say it, you know, give them the space for that. As far as some red flags, something that I just generally like people to know, and again, this applies to your veteran friends, but even non-veterans, is anytime you notice a major shift in someone's like personality or behavior, that may be a cause for concern. So, you know, if someone it's usually like more mellow and they're suddenly like, yeah, let's go. You know, they're always like hyped up. That is something to be aware of. Or if they're usually like super energetic and they want to do things and now they don't want to do anything, right? Those are some major swings. And those are things you would want to watch out for, especially knowing that maybe that person in your life has been in combat or has experienced some kind of trauma. If you have that knowledge, you know, it's very possible that these major changes are associated with that trauma. So, you know, just creating that space of safety where this person feels like they can talk about the things without being judged.
Thank you for bringing that up, Dania, because, you know, one of the previous conversations I had around mental health, a mom who lost her son to suicide, she said exactly what you just said. She said, you know, he had been depressed all of this time, and, you know, he was always low, but then a week or 2 weeks before he took his life, he was really happy. He was really in good spirits. And you know, if we have no awareness of this, if we don't know what to look for, you know, this mom felt like, oh my gosh, right? My son's coming back. Life is good again. But it was really actually a big red flag that he had made up his mind and he had already planned on how things were going to happen. So for everybody out there, I know this is a difficult conversation. I know that this is, you know, this, if you're listening and this is triggering some things, first find some help, look up some help. There's crisis lines out there. If you are finding yourself in the situation, you know, I'm going to ask Dania, Paul, if you guys can share some resources, where can people find somebody? Also, if this is too much for you right now, you know, keep scrolling and come back to it later. If you don't want to come back to this conversation later, I do ask though that you just call somebody, that you find that safe person, that safe place, that safe group that you feel comfortable sharing your experiences with, so that we can, like Paul says, diffuse that bomb, because you matter, you're important, and there's a lot of people out here for you. So Michael, let's start with you here at HCC. For our students here at HCC, where can they find that help? Dania will go to you and then to you, Paul.
Okay, we do have resources here at HCC on the third floor. I'm kind of brain farting. I'm listening to what Dania and Paul are saying, and I'm actually taking notes in my head because thank y'all, by the way. That was very helpful because I tend to listen. It's not like I'm trying to ignore science, but I just listen and soak in what people tell me, and, you know, act accordingly, depending on the situation. But we do have a crew of folks on the third floor here at in the RCF building, and, you know, I'll direct students to them. We have counselors here, our counseling services at HCC to help out. That's who I, you know, point people to.
Absolutely. Dania, tell us a little bit about, you know, your office, your services, where they can find you. And if you have other lines outside of HCC, where can they go?
Yeah, so I, like I said before, I work as a personal counselor in counseling and career services. So I do like individual personal counseling with folks. So it's kind of like short-term counseling. And then if folks are needing something more long-term, we can help them find that through other channels, which I'll talk a little more about. But we also provide like career counseling, job search assistance, resume review. There's a lot of support services, disability support services, just within that one suite on RCF. So that's one, there's some on-campus resources. We also do support groups. We do a lot of outreach. If there's a support group that students are interested in that we don't offer, there's opportunities for them to suggest that via our webpage. So that's how we kind of connect to students in that way. And then off campus, there's a veterans crisis line. There are what are called vet centers throughout the country, which are a place for folks to get some mental health support. Military One Source is another option. And then, like stuff like Paul's doing, right? There's these community groups, these community spaces where people can connect to other veterans. Sometimes you don't want to like necessarily go talk to a professional, but you just want to talk to somebody who knows what you're talking about. And so maybe that's, like Paul said, like at the American Legion, right? You just go hang out and talk to folks. But I think the real emphasis for me is on staying connected, because a lot of times these experiences feel so isolating that people want to withdraw, right? They think I'm the only one, it's just me. I, for some reason, am the only one who can't readjust, but based on the numbers and my own experience, that's just not the case. Right? There's so many people who are having the same experience with you as you, and just connecting with even one of them can be really, really, really transformative. So all these resources are out there. But again, just a person, a friend is also a resource. It's a place to start. So I like to include that as well.
Paul, what can you add to that?
Well, I am on the NAMI board of directors, which is the National Agency on Mental Illness. And I will tell you that we have, excuse me one second. The NAMI has a group where they actually do counseling here in the state of Maryland and, all over the state. And we have a group in NAMI Howard County who handles a lot of things that deal with mental illness. And they deal with not only, I started the veterans part of it because they didn't have one in the state. So actually on the veterans part, we have one now. We're trying to start up all over the state. So we have veterans calling in from Charles County, Carroll County, up in Baltimore County. We had somebody down from the Eastern Shore call into our group last month and dealing with veterans from all over the state. They also have things for families, for family issues and for children issues. They have group meetings for all of those. And there are good resources. You also have Grassroots, which is down the street for really emergency situations. So if I have a situation with a veteran online that I'm finding that what we call a hot potato, which means he is a risk of hurting himself or someone else, if we can't get 911 to get to his residence, we normally will reach out to grassroots and see if they have a mobile unit, crisis unit in the area that we can send to them. Because if they're not in our county, we don't know what's down there in Charles County. We don't know what's down. And I don't tend to want to send the police to a house that can turn bad. I tend to want to send an emergency unit for mental health to a place to give them the first opportunity to defuse the bomb before we send in a grenade to blow up a bomb. You know, it's one of those things where you don't want to put the person in a situation where they feel like if they hadn't called in, this wouldn't be a problem right now. You want to put the person in a relaxed situation where they can sit there and go, okay, they sent somebody here. These people are just going to talk to you, see how you're feeling, and they can make a decision on the spot. Because me talking to you through the line, I can see your face, but I can barely judge you. I can judge what you're saying. I can judge your eyes and see, you know, some things that I look for to see what stresses you're under. But I can judge you better if I'm sitting in front of you, if you have a nervous tic. If you have, you know, there's a lot of things that we look at. And I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a trained professional. I'm not any of those. I mean, you know, I have a master's degree in leadership, but I've learned this over the years on how to judge people. And I'm pretty good at judging, you know, different things that go on and trying to point people in the right direction. So NAMI is a good resource for a lot of mental issues, a lot of mental health issues for both family, children, veterans. Grassroots is your emergency, in this area, is your emergency issues. If you get, because they have the professionals on standby all the time to go in at a moment's notice to help bring the people out of their crisis situations. And that's what I use.
Mm-hmm. The one number that I would like to give everybody is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and that's 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. So there's a lot of resources out there. If you need assistance, I will make myself available. No, I am not a professional, but you know, if you just need somebody that you can reach out to and say, hey, I'm going through this, I promise you, we will find together exactly what Paul just said. That right person who's going to help de-escalate the issue, not make it worse. So thanks for bringing that up. It's important. We need safe spaces. We need trained professionals. Everybody needs to learn how to support each other better. And it starts with that awareness. It starts with that. It's like, okay, if somebody's going through a crisis, maybe calling the police on this one's not the best way to go. Maybe we need to call grassroots. Maybe we need to find somebody else and start there. Thanks for bringing that up. We have just about 10 more minutes, and I really, you know, there's so much more. There's so many things that you guys have brought up throughout our conversation that could be full 1 hour conversations. But I'd like to take this last few minutes that we have together to open it up to you guys, right? I had two questions. The one was really geared towards, okay, for everybody who's listening, who's watching, who may not be a veteran, just everybody in our community, right? Things that you want them to be very, very aware of and take away from this conversation. And also I had a question about veterans, right? If you guys could speak to the veterans themselves, maybe somebody who's in transition, maybe somebody who's going through this. So I will let each one of you can combine them both into one. You can decide which one you guys want to talk to, you know, for the last few minutes that we have together. But if there's one message that you want everybody to take away, or you want to send away today from our conversation, what would that be? And Dania, we'll start with you. We'll go with Mike. We'll finish with Paul.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So my overarching message really is about like connection and community, which is what I touched on a little bit earlier. But human beings are social creatures, right? We need the support of other human beings. And I think we get a lot of messaging, you know, in the military specifically too, about like being independent, being an individual, right? But that's not how these things work. You know, like we didn't end up with PTSD as an individual, right? Something else happened. Other factors were involved. Other people were involved. But then we feel like we have to solve the issue on our own. And I think that's really unfair, right? Because it's like pretty hard to do. And then people end up feeling like, again, incompetent. Why can't I get it together? Why, right? And they blame themselves a lot. And then, you know, this becomes this additionally isolating experience that we were talking about. So what I like to say is, like, you didn't create your challenges on your own. Why do you feel like you have to solve them on your own, right? There are other people here who want to do that. And again, that might just be a friend or a family member, or it might be a trained professional, but there are people that want to be a part of your healing if you are able to let them do that, right? So community, community is really like the thing that I like to remind people about. Yeah.
Also, I'm next. Okay. Well, my message, and you know, I was kind of writing them down. Number one, you're not alone. There are people here to help you out, you know, to give their best effort to help lead you in the right direction as far as getting the help that you need. If you have questions, ask. I say that to my students all the time about the VA benefits, but I also, you know, let them know that, you know, if you have something to talk about, and, you know, if I'm not the person, then fine, I'll help you get to the person. But, you know, if you have anything you want to talk about, go ahead and ask, talk to me. You know, we can talk, we can Zoom, we can email, phone, however you need to speak to me, I'm here for you. Another one from I said this on the Veterans Day interview to folks who say that they're going to help veterans. And, you know, if you're charged with doing that, do it. And I think that's a very simple one. I mean, I know there's a lot more to it, but I've been doing this job for about 4.5 years now. And that's one of the things that I've noticed. And I don't want to call any particular organization out, but if you're charged with helping veterans, help veterans. You know, thank you for your service is nice and it is appreciated. It really is. But, you know, if you're saying that and you're saying, hey, I'm here to help you out, but then every time a phone call comes, it's okay, well, you know, I'll shoot you an email later or whatever. Do what you're charged to do. Do what you say that you're going to do. And that's my message.
Okay. I was going to start off with letting the veterans know that you're not alone, that there are other veterans in the same situation you're in. You're not an individual. You're part of a team. Next, I would say they need to take that first step. First step's important. Realizing that you have the issues and realizing that you're not alone and realizing that you can get help if you choose. I would tell them to join a support group. Joining support group means you're running into other veterans and you may realize that your situation is not nearly as bad as theirs, that there's always somebody else with a worse situation than you. You may have lost one leg, they may have lost two. They may have lost two legs, this person may have lost two legs and an arm, but they're still fighting and they're still trying. So they're not alone. There are other veterans in the same situation or in worse situations and they're not gonna be judged. Next, I would tell them, you know, we have a good support group in Howard County, and they can go on to namihowardcounty.org and log in there and see support groups, and we meet the first Monday of every month. Come out for one, see if you like it. We have people who've been with us for a year now that come on, and they look forward to that once a month, which we would move to two if we get a lot more people at a time. But right now, they look forward to that once a month because it's almost like a gathering that we can't do because of COVID, but we're able to do it online. And you get to hear other people's stories and you get to reflect your story and their stories. And everybody gets to get a chance to, you know, expel that negative energy. So those are things I would tell your listeners. Those are things I would tell my brother veterans and sister veterans, that you're not alone. Take the first step, join a group, become a part of it. Do not shut yourself away. Do not shut yourself in, because when the walls are shut in, all they do is close in. You have to break down those walls and move out. Just like if you were moving out on a mission, make it your mission to move out and become more, because you can become more. And if that's not enough, help somebody. Join a group to help. Go out and help clean up streets or help build houses, get groceries for somebody. But the more you help, the better you feel, especially if you're in a depression mode. The more you help, the better you feel. And you just go out and you just start helping people. Even if they don't appreciate you, helping them, all of them, because some of them will not realize that. Make it feel good for yourself. Don't worry about what they feel. Worry about what you feel. And that's what I would advise them.
And I think that's a beautiful way to close. I thank you all so much for your words. What I am taking with me today is, you know, this need for community. And I know we've been talking about veterans, but I want to expand it to everybody, because we all need community, right? We just need to be there for each other. COVID has showed us how important it is to have that community, to have proximity, even if it is through a Zoom call like we're doing right now. We're having this conversation right now. It's important to know that there are people out there that we can look into, that we can look for when we have need. The other thing that I want to, that I'm taking with me, is the power in asking for help. And, you know, I want to just really encourage everybody to use that power that you have. If you're going through any type of situation today, if you're a veteran, find that veteran community. If you are a young person, find that young group, right? Find that youth group that's going to help you. If you are an elderly person, find that group, find that community that suits and it's good for you. You're not alone. And there's power in asking for help. Those are all the messages that I am taking with me. This has been a really powerful, healing conversation for me, empowering conversation for me. Take that first step, make that call. There's all of these resources. I will try to go back and type some of the resources that were shared with us here today in our conversation on the comments on our Dragon Digital Radio page, so you can start and take that first step. Grab onto your power. Go ahead. There's people out there who want to help you without any judgment and lots of love. Thank you so much, Dania, Michael, and Paul, for sharing your story and your time with me this morning and with everybody in our community. We are recording this episode in December 20th, right before Christmas. I want to wish happy holidays, Merry Christmas. And the best gift you can give yourself is to honor whatever it is you're feeling inside of you, making that first call, taking that first step towards your wellness. Have a beautiful rest of your Monday. I will be back next year. This was our last episode, closing, like we say in Spanish, with broche de oro. So have a beautiful, beautiful day. Until next time, I am Cris Oviedo.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.